Hello and welcome to the next episode of the SAP Learning Insights mini-series Texture, where we get a student's point of view on SAP and professional development. I'm David Chaviano, co-hosting with Magdalena Glass, who will be introducing the subject of today's episode.
Hi, David. I'm really excited into getting into the new episode. So last week, we was discussing with our guest, Mariam, why future skills actually do matter. So now I'm excited that we're going to start diving deeper into the topic, into a more personal level. So talking about having a mindset that allows us to approach the unknown, to approach the future confidently, we want to take a look into the meaning and challenges of change. We want to see how skills can help overcome uncertainty within ourselves and talk about the buzzword mindset. So I was going a bit into myself thinking what skills could be connected to our today's topic. And I would say it could be any skill, but especially courage, daring to take risks, agile thinking and flexibility are skills that you need to face change. And it sounds really simple, but self-confidence and coping with uncertainty is a future skill as well. And I thought how to get there. And I think the most important skill to that is translating the knowledge you already have and being able to put this into a new context and expand it from there. So this is what we're going to be talking about today.
All right. And with us today to talk about this is Lucas and Santiago. Lucas, you want to kick us off with a quick introduction of yourself?
Hi, I'm Lucas. Thank you for having me in the conversation. I am leading one of the teams in ICN, which is Innovation Center Network in Potsdam. And my main job is to look into the future and try to bring SAP new prototypes and new innovation into our landscape. So exciting to look forward to the discussion.
Nice. Santiago?
Hi, I'm Santiago. Thanks, David, Magdalena, for having me here. I am a working student at SAP. I'm working in enterprise architecture, and I've been at SAP for almost 2 years, but I have a gap in between those 2 years. I also left for almost 6 months to a different company to try something new, and now I'm back.
Good to have you back. What brought you back, if I may ask?
To me, it is the culture.
Okay.
Yeah, the communities.
Cool. All right. Good to hear. I think we should go into our ASAP round just to get to loosen you up a little bit, get the creative juices flowing. And I'll start with the first question, starting with you, Lucas. If studying at university was a gamified augmented reality lecture, which course would have been your favorite?
Oh, I think I'll answer you the classically SAP way. It depends. Because if we, in that environment, we probably have different lectures to choose from than today, if we have that classes, the environment ready. I think my first thought is a class that will be on collaboration, class that would let me find a way to collaborate with different mindsets across in that virtual augmentation. Or maybe you can maybe give me some insights how the class will be run so I can pick better subject for it.
Well, I guess the point of the question is based on the classes or courses that you have taken at university, which one do you think would be most exciting or enhanced if it was turned into an augmented reality experience? History, for example. I think that would be pretty cool if we could witness.
I actually took Irish business law. And if I think that class being augmented will be pretty fun because you're going through different cases and businesses that happens that will, you can visualize them better how their conflict was triggered and across the time and how they resolve some contractual disputes. That might be easier to learn.
Okay, interesting. Irish business law, a very specific course.
Yeah.
Santiago, what about you?
You stole mine, David, but I already thought about something different. I was thinking of history, of course. But political sciences, I think, would be my second option. Because sometimes when we're studying these philosophers and so on, and we were reading some of their texts, I think I would really have enjoyed a lot listening to this person speaking it publicly, for example, or, you know, the spirit of the person speaking their words.
Okay, very cool. And I know there's a few parliaments out there that tend to get a little bit rowdy. Like chairs start to fly, stuff gets a little bit crazy. I think that'd be an interesting experience to see that in action and augmented reality. But okay, Magdalena, you want to take on the next question?
Yeah, definitely. Basically, this is already a great bridge because I was thinking within SAP, I get so much excitement for technology, but I also have a different perspective coming through my academics in sociology. And we see technology not just as something good and always supporting society. I also think it creates maybe a bit of loneliness for some people or supporting it. So I was thinking what you guys wish in the future, the impact technology could have on society, starting with you, Santiago.
If I had a wish, I think I would want to make it more, I don't know, that we can get closer to each other. Like, for example, what we're doing right now, right? So my background, I was born in Colombia, here an international student, and because of FaceTime or any other video calling services, I can enjoy spending time with my mom, with my sister, with my brother, and looking at them, listening to them. And it takes away a little bit, you know, the feeling of just taking the phone, communicating through audio only. So this virtual reality, augmented reality, all of these topics, I think have a really good potential to bring us together in the future. So if I had a wish, I just would wish that maybe this would bring us a bit more together, less of being lonely, I guess.
That's a really nice idea, thinking that the contact would feel more face-to-face if that was possible. What about you, Lucas?
Yeah, so my brain goes in two different directions. Somehow, one is I always wondered, because now we have information exchange and we see so much also how bad things happen in the world and we are exposed to it. But was this always happening and then we just didn't have enough information to expose and be aware of it? Or is just recently everything is just much, much worse? So I was thinking with that technology, we could maybe figure out how to prevent that and then how we can together stop. I think this does give us to the exposure of the evil things happening in the world that we can address it. And then together through the collaboration to fix that. And the other place my brain was going towards sustainability. I mean, we have lots of projects and lots of discussion on that. And I think that's created awareness. It's more than awareness how to do it. And then many people come with different ideas. And if you think global, act local, I like in this approach. So you can, in your environment, use technology to help. And then you just add to globally. And then you can see how they're contributing.
Okay. So sustainability is as well a place where I see the most potential right now for technology to have a great impact. Coming now to the core of our discussion to talk about change. And I personally think the unknown is what is created by the change. And there's a lot of uncertainty connected with it. But then I thought, sometimes we are afraid of the things we are going to do because of this uncertainty. Because we don't know how to do it, because we don't know how it's going to turn out. But then I went a step back and I thought, everything in life we are doing, we have to do for a first time. We maybe have to try first. Is it walking, talking? Everything has to be learned. So I was hoping you could share some idea of how you got to tackle an academic or a work project which seemed complex to you, which was maybe difficult to do, and which brought you to a very new field. Santiago.
Yeah, this is an ongoing topic for me, I would say. I'm never there in the end point where I'm like, oh, I know how to tackle this. But I would say for me, it's mostly three things. The first one would be structure. To have a plan, a blueprint of what I would like to achieve, how I would want to tackle this, for example. Maybe I start step by step, the first step, second step, and so on. Or maybe I tackle it in a more agile way. Maybe I start with first step that gives me input for the third step and so on and so forth, like writing a research paper or something. Then the second point would be try to contextualize myself within the topic, within the job, the work. What is it that maybe is the bigger picture? This often really sets the ground for any kind of work that I have. If I'm introduced into a new work topic, I think I always try to learn about the general things. If I'm really lost and I'm in a new position, maybe the SharePoint page of that will help me. This is the kind of things I'm talking about. And then the third point would be to leverage my network. And this is something I've seen a lot in the people I'm working with. This is something I've learned. It doesn't come naturally to me. I think I'm more shy in that way. But I think, for example, my girlfriend, when she feels like facing something new and doesn't know how to tackle it, it's very easy for her to ask using the channels of the student community in Microsoft Teams. It's very easy for her to contact a previous employee, a previous coworker, a friend, and so on. And I think this can be very helpful. People can really guide you in good ways. So those would be the three points for me.
The last point I love really much, because I think this is something culture has to learn, that you don't have to do everything on your own. And it is always a good thing to ask for help. And I think this pressure of managing everything on your own is something you need to learn to lose. And I think contact with other people, making edges sharper, works much better together. So, Lukasz, what about you?
Oh, you give me lots of time for my brain to wander. I think I have a couple of points. One is, I think you just start and take it from there, which mainly means you just don't hesitate to start working on this. Don't think, nor don't learn thinking. But looking for a more systematic approach, what we try to do is to visualize the final result, to really like, what is the final outcome I'm looking for with this, even is unknown, but there's some goal I'm trying to achieve, and try to visualize what it is the goal is. And then you work backwards, like, what are the pieces of this goal that I really want to have to achieve? And then, do I need to go to my community? Who do I know? As Santiago mentioned, there are lots of touch points, methods you can discover. But once you really know what the goal is, that also brought me one thought. I don't remember exactly how that story went, but I think there was I think Einstein was asked the question, if your life depends on solving one problem and you have 60 minutes, how would you approach to solve it? And I think he said, I would spend 55 minutes of asking questions about the problem to really understand what try to do, and then 5 minutes to solve it. And I think that's kind of bottom line, is we're hearing approach and we're hearing some task and we just go for it, but we don't really dig into but what's the essence of this challenge? And then we can, once we understand this, we can go backwards and try to find ways to get there. Sorry, that's my kind of answer on this.
I just thought it was interesting that the common thread of not being scared to ask questions is really important. And in some cultures, I think, dare I say, maybe even in Germany, that there's a lot of shame associated with not knowing and being seen as lacking a particular information or know-how. And it's really cool to hear sort of the reinforcement that one should overcome that and just ask questions.
Yeah, also from the more cultural perspective talking, I guess we are getting taught that there is some kind of perfectionism you need to bring with yourself. And I have really struggled losing the picture of I'm not supposed to fail, but within failure is so much you can learn. So Lukasz, the next question goes more into your direction. I was wondering if you want to find technology or solutions that are supposed to have an impact on the future, what skills would you state out to be important? Because I personally could not imagine how I would know what will work, what is impactful in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's a technology question, but I think the technology is not the answer, because it's hard to tell if you're looking at what skills you need to have for future, and we're trying to think, oh, a prompt engineering, or I don't think that's the way to go. It is the way to what is really the technology supposed to work, and then be open-minded to learn it and really not have hesitations from your past experience, like, oh, I only know C++, this is my core, I'm not trying the new things. Then you just limit yourself. You just go, brain, you accept the fact that you may have tennis experience, something, some technology, this is new to you, and you want to learn it, and you feel like a child again and try to play with it. Then you're really much more going to be successful than trying to think, oh, the world moving so fast, I can't catch up, I have so much experience, and I don't want to learn the new things anymore. So I think that maybe is the change in that. But back to your question, it's exploration. And as the new technology is being brought up, we're actually exploring what it can do, what the limitations are, and trying to connect with existing technology pieces, and try to also learn how it works. Also, it's not just come from nowhere. Someone thought about it and introduced it, and they are pioneers of it. And we're trying also pioneer our things as we see fit. especially in SAP context, we're looking at the business processes and how we can apply into our environment and leverage SAP data. That's usually our angle that we start with for technologies.
All right. So shifting gears into maybe a change management discussion, I think that the source of a lot of human unhappiness is sort of attachment to the status quo. That could be either someone's attachment to age, to their youth, to a material object, that sort of thing. But inevitably, all things move on and things constantly evolve. And I think that translates into the professional environment in the form of business transformations, reorganizations, and that sort of thing. And I've seen at least one relatively rough business transformation that has occurred where people lost a lot of their responsibilities. They lost tasks that they loved to do, and they lost entire platforms or products that they were responsible for. How would you, starting with you, Lucas, manage or deal with that change, especially when it's perceived as a downgrade or loss?
Oh, it's a very difficult topic. And I think it's you can address this on the global corporate level. You can address it on your team level when changing priorities. And I think the first step is not really rush and to understand, yeah, the impact, have empathy for individuals, because this affects everyone. But try, and I think we try to look into the opportunities, because it happens for a reason. It happens that there is some thought behind it, why we want to do the new things the new way, and why a certain group of people are going to be part of this new structure or task force. And then embrace it what the opportunities are. And essentially from the management side, this is the part of the work to find opportunities for everybody, to find how they will contribute and how they're going to grow further. And often, especially when you look at the org organization announcements, we're looking at how it affects us personally. But if you look, what's the purpose of business? Let's say our leaders looking for, they want to grow the company. They want to make sure we stay competitive. So there's the reasons why certain things happen. And if you look what they're trying to do and how we can fit our skills or new skills into that directions, then you're more excited about the change rather than thinking of what you lost. Maybe that's my mindset sometimes. But yeah, it affects everyone differently.
Okay. And Santiago, so you mentioned that you have experienced quite a bit of change in different jobs. You worked for 6 months at a different organization previously. I imagine, based on your feedback, that the culture was what brought you back to SAP, that maybe you felt that this new place that you went to previously was maybe a downgrade in the culture. How did you cope with that and deal with that in your own personal experience?
David, you nailed it. You really read my answer. This was really tough for me, I would say. But the good thing is that, you know, in this more modern world, I think there are more resources nowadays that we can leverage to make this feeling of uncertainty and anxiety and I'm lost in the world to relieve it a little bit better. For me, it has been therapy. I've been in therapy for 2 years already, and my psychologist really helped me a lot going through those moments of dealing a lot with uncertainty of maybe this is not the right culture for me. And essentially what I experienced was that I was sort of transitioning from a fixed mindset into a more of a growth mindset. That's why I decided maybe, and before jumping into this new organization, maybe I wanted to try something new. I wanted to try a different field that I would have a good time, that I would like it, because yeah, it was something I thought I would like, a new field. What if it didn't turn out to be like that? So to make that decision, I had to bet it. I had to make a bet. I'm going to this new organization. I'm going to explore this new field. And what if things don't work out? There's always a plan B. And there's this flexibility that I think really enabled me to go through that experience and to take a little bit of a risk, which at that time in my experience and my years of being in the corporate world, it was a huge step. But I took it and I learned a lot from it. I learned that, for example, the field that I was exploring was finance. I learned that, in the essence, what I like of these tasks was the analytical skills. And I realized, okay, maybe this career path is not for me. And I had to go through this process of loss, of losing what I thought was my dream job. But then after that, I grew so much stronger out of it, and I got to know myself more and realized that this flexibility, adaptability, moving towards a growth mindset was going to enable me to, in the end, just try new things that I'm excited to try. For example, this podcast, I was so excited, but at the same time, there's this uncertainty, what can go wrong? This is the first time I'm doing this, so will this be a good time? So I think in the end, it's just what has helped a lot for me is trying to make compromises in things that I'm excited, that I want to experience. Even if things go south, I know it's not going to be the end of the world, because I know I've proven myself, I can be adaptable, I can be resilient, I can go through things. And this allows me to just try new experiences that I want to try, but maybe in the past I wouldn't have tried because of this fear of anxiety.
Okay.
Yeah, I think for you, when you have, as you mentioned, you do the analytics and then you think it's a loss. But I think if you look back on your career, this all is a building blocks for who you are and how you actually contribute in the long part. And I've been having 8 different jobs in SAP and from development and consulting, all of this. And all of them kind of add value as you move to the next projects and in the next step, because you just know more and you have perspective is better. Just, I think from all the colleagues, I think it's a great way to try new things.
Very cool. And great point, Santiago, by the way, on sort of the impact on your mental health and getting assistance with that if necessary to figure out how your mind can better cope with these situations as well.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's something many people don't talk about, but, you know, from my personal experience, everybody lives this very differently. Mm-hmm. Coping with change can be very overwhelming. Like the first time I was in a team at SAP, it was in a customer success team. And, you know, customer success organization and all of the changes they have had to go through. It was such a dynamic team and it was the first team I was part of. It was so overwhelming in the beginning that this is when I first started seeing patterns in this very dynamic team. How do they cope with all of this? Because it's a lot to take. And yeah, there's a couple of points that maybe I can share with you in the next questions, but yeah.
Yeah, I think this sets up perfectly for the topic of uncertainty. And Magdalena, I think you had a couple of questions on that, right?
Right. So Santiago, as you said, you was working in different fields. You had this experience. If I think of myself, my working student job is going to finish at some point and I need to orientate myself on where this journey will go. And I do have some uncertainty and some anxiety to it. But what is something actual you can do to face complexity, to face uncertainty, and to gain confidence in the things you are doing and the things you are going to do?
Yes, I would just want to share a couple of points that I read in a Harvard Business Review article. This is actually one of the articles that got me into this field of change management. It's written by the entrepreneurship professor of INSEAD, Nathan Furr. And the entrepreneur, which also happens to be his wife, Susanna Harmon, they touch 4 points. The first one is to reframe your situation by focusing on the potential upside. I think this is what Lucas was sharing in the beginning. Change is a big opportunity for you to upskill, to practice a new skill, to just try something new that you probably would like, you know, but because of this fear of the unknown, you are afraid of trying. The second point is to basically reduce uncertainty in areas of your life where you can do it, to then take on more uncertainty in other areas. So, for example, they said business travelers sometimes tend to have a very fixed traveling routine. They wake up at the same time. Maybe they book the same flight seat. Maybe they book the same hotel room. And this, demonstrated by the research, has helped them to take on more uncertainty in other areas of their life. The third point was to take modest actions. And the way I understand this is try to be a little bit more proactive. Put yourself out there. Just try to do something new. You know, it doesn't have to be the biggest step that you do. For me, this has been more like, what do I have around me? What can I leverage that is around me? And something that is very vivid day to day has been the student community. Been part of the student community for some time, and I'm part of events. So we get to plan some events, we get to do student night outs, which is basically we go meet with students in a restaurant, but we have to do the whole planning and we have to try to make sure that the event is good for everybody. So from my perspective, it has been to realize what things I like, try to compromise on doing something new about it, maybe a small project taking on a small event. And then with step by step with the experience, it really gets easier. And then the final point is to change your mindset into a more long-term mindset. Basically to remember that the game of life is long-term. So if you focus on a fixed mindset, for example, winning or losing, that winning mentality, business mindset, and so on, maybe you will really go and struggle a lot with uncertainty or failure and so on. But if you see the game of life as long-term, then you realize failing is just a part of the game, right? And this really works for me a lot, I would say. I think the third point that I said, try to be more proactive, taking small steps. The fourth one, reshaping that mindset into more long-term, to see life as a long-term game. This has helped me, to be fair.
That's some really interesting idea, because I thought, I want to disagree, especially on the last point, because life is not a game, and somehow it is about existence as well. If I have a job and it's financing my life, and this is not a game, if I lose this game, then maybe I have to start over completely. And I think there's not such a thing as completely losing it. But there is sometimes not exactly this opportunity for try and error in life. So what is something I can prepare myself for to step into the future? What might help? Question to you, Lucas.
Yeah. If we take the perspective from secure my existence first, so if, for example, we take that perspective, then I want to keep my current job or my current activities that I to let me sustain and exist and finance my life the way I have it as something that we can maintain. So then we try to prepare to be aware of what's coming. And then you can try maybe things like Santiago mentioned, things that maybe you want to learn new things or go somewhere. But you always have this, your backup plan is that your existence is secure, and just to make the minor steps forward and, you know, try new technology that you believe makes sense or learn new things that make sense to you because you're seeing how the market moves. But it's then, yeah, I think you put your opportunities in many different baskets, and then one of them might be the one that next opportunity will help you. Just give an example from our work. Last year, I think in May, we did lots of efforts towards augmentation, metaverse topics. And then in May, GenAI came, we totally switched. So we thought we were preparing for the immersive world, augmentations, VR glasses, and then actually it was different directions. So in the nature of my work, when I have maybe 5-6 projects, I'm trying to do them almost in different spaces, making sure that if one of them is successful, then I can move the team and everyone's careers in this one successful path. But that also means for everyone involved in different projects who are not successful, they have a change. They need to adapt to the new way. And be prepared for it. So it's a little bit that rotation of tasks and rotation of being involved a little bit everywhere. It's one way to protect yourself from uncertainty. But at the same time, because you don't invest your time to certain things, so you're not expert in anything at the same time. So whenever the new future comes, you're not going to be the best one in this new future because you're not really were super invested in that particular part. But that's the risk. You didn't gamble all your life activities in this one direction. So you tried many different. And then you maintain the medium level, but you maintain your life. But if you look at entrepreneurs, sometimes they put the house on mortgage and they bet all credit cards on this one idea. And if they're going to be successful, they have a big startup and then make lots of money. But lots of don't. And they have just different averse to risk. And you have to decide for yourself, where are you on this path? I don't know.
That's a really great idea to try to evaluate how much risk you are able or you're willing to take. And taking one step back onto what you said, Santiago, it is again something you don't have to do on your own. Even finding your career path is nothing you have to be totally being left alone with. You can connect with people. You can have people support you going your way. And this again shows you have other people to walk your path with.
Yeah, so your average risk is also different at this stage of life. You may pack your bag to go to a new country when you're 20. You won't do it when you're 40, probably, or you have family. So there's some different circumstances that limit you, that you also choose not to take that risk because of things that you could lose. I think you're back to game theory, probably.
And it's something that you mentioned, Lucas, to realize how much risk you're willing to take. And not only that, but what kind of risks you feel more comfortable taking, right? For some people, it is more the intellectual risks. So, for example, they become professors and they share their ideas very openly on business reviews and so on, right? They put their ideas and then share them, and they are not afraid of encountering resistance and then, yeah, giving a counter argument. There's people that are more confident when dealing with emotional risks. For example, stepping into a new relationship. There's people that can be that need to be in a stable and long-term relationship. Like, for example, me, I don't like dating here, dating there, you know, I cannot understand these people. This is not the way I am built. But there's other people that really feel very confident being alone and dating here, dating there, maybe having a short-term relationship and so on. There are different kind of risks, right? For some other people, it's financial risks. And then they build companies and they put themselves out there and pitch their work to investors. It's also one topic I heard in one of these podcasts with this INSEAD professor and his wife. They were talking about this. He said that the professor said that he was more comfortable with taking on intellectual risks, whereas his wife was more overall confident into taking financial risks. And in the end, this balance is also necessary for the couple, right? What if both of these parents was very confident taking financial risks? What would happen to their kids, right? What would happen if they had to go to university and pay for the university in the US and so on? So overall, it's just a matter of try to also understand ourselves a bit more, right? What are we maybe more confident on taking and try to put it in practice?
And I should probably add, there's got to be an age factor here too, right? So the younger you are, the less attachments one has. That's the time to really just throw caution to the wind and try something out. But as one advances in age, especially if you end up starting a family, definitely a major factor to take into account. And I would tend not to advise people, like, once you have a family and are relatively established in life, I would advise them probably not to take the advice of like a 20-something-year-old entrepreneur who just basically is starting out and going full bore on any risk that they can find. But yeah, overall, that all makes sense. I think that was quite helpful. Regarding uncertainty and complexity, one thing maybe I could get a short couple of words from both of you on is regarding planning. So I find planning at a high level of detail to be a little bit useless in terms of just how quickly things change. So the goalposts move constantly based on the conditions of the business, and a plan that you set up in fine detail at the end of the year, which is currently what I'm doing, by the second month of the next year, the circumstances have changed so much that a lot of the plan just doesn't make sense anymore. Do you have any words of advice or anecdotes on that in terms of granularity of planning? Lucas?
I mean, yeah, I have the thought that I thought to share. It's, which we also try to do in our work, be firm with your opinions, mm-hmm. but then be agile to change it. So you really follow your plan as long as you can, but then if next month no makes sense anymore, you just adapt it and just be open about it. That might be the interpretation of it. But yeah, we also see this. We don't plan way ahead. We try to think maybe next 2-3 months in detail and then see how things happen. There's there's no other way. But I think as long as you trust in your, like, you have the desires where you want to go, then you can manipulate the plan to get you what you want to have and adapt to opportunities. I think it's really hard to plan nowadays for, like, oh, this is where I'm going to be in 5 years. There's no way you can predict that.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense. Santiago, did you have any notes to add there regarding maybe some plans that you've made in life that just turned out to be totally useless? Lessons learned there?
Yeah. As I said in the beginning, I think I used to have a very fixed mindset, and trying to approach life with this fixed mindset has proven to be really, really difficult. And as I encounter or realize that these big plans or big goals that I have in my head, when I get there, for example, when I tried finance, I thought, oh, this is going to be so big for me. This is the thing that I will like. And then realizing it was not that, it really forced me to get out and think in a different way. It cannot be always black and white, right? If I don't like it, then it's not the end of the world, right? Then it's being flexible, being adaptable, realizing what the essence of this that I'm trying to accomplish is, and maybe not the goal on its own. And when I think backwards, when I think of the steps I've taken in my life, I never imagined I would be an international student, you know? In the beginning, when I started studying the bachelor's in Colombia, I just had a goal. I needed to finish my bachelor's and I wanted to have good grades because I just thought this will get me places. This will bring more opportunities. And when I was on the seventh semester and all my friends were thinking, oh, let's do an exchange year. Let's do an exchange semester. Let's go here. Let's go there. I just applied to France, got rejected. Was also not in my plans to come to Germany. It was out of luck, I would say. Not only that, but the university also offered me a double degree. So then in the end, I would get a German bachelor's degree if I completed this year with grades, good grades, and did the master thesis and bachelor thesis and so on. So it's very funny because I know and I reflect back and I realize, yes, I've had to be flexible and I've been okay with being flexible and having goals more like guiding, more having a goal that guides me instead of a goal that I need to get from A to B. And if this doesn't happen, then there was a failure, you know? But it's like in my nature, you know, maybe it's in other people's natures as well to just go back to their shells. But after, yeah, realizing all of these things and putting myself out there, I think, yeah, goalposts do move and a plan may be just the blueprint, but after you kickstart something, it reshapes itself and it does get easier from my perspective. When you kickstart it, when you start executing something, it's easier to go with the flow.
You said you was coming from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. And when I was thinking of, I want to talk about mindset, I was thinking of this. It's about performance. It's about strength. It's about perfection. You shouldn't make mistakes. You shouldn't show weaknesses. This is something social media is somehow presenting to the world. And people telling you, okay, with this idea, you can shape your business and you need the right mindset for it. But in sociology, we talk about the separation between having a fixed and a growth mindset. And this made so clear to me that future skills aren't just about skills, not just soft skills, hard skills. It's about attitudes you have. And that's why I wanted to talk about mindset. So maybe you, Lucas, can share what is your perception of mindset and what is essential to the mindset that makes you being able to be a good impact for the future or to be able to be supportive of shaping the future?
Oh, tough question. So one thing that inspired me from Santiago's story is here that I would interpret as a persistence, because we did mention multiple times, be agile, be adaptive, but that doesn't mean change your goals. It just you adapt to the way to achieve your goals. But I think the persistency is something that I think also helps me really preparing for the future. Persistent in being top awareness of what's going on and in my methods, persistence, and also being able to change them. And the other thing, the open-mindedness. So I think to one degree, the future, the change is not that quick as we might imagine. It's not really overnight. And yeah, we may see some technology appears here and there that is sudden boom. But the way the world adapted, it takes time. So you really have time to think this through, how you're going to be in this new environment, how you see yourself in these new changes, where you can prepare your skills and in your roles, how to move forward. And we see also with many different industries that even though technology is there, they're not really adapting it yet, because maybe it doesn't make sense for them financially for the business, or it doesn't make sense for them how to operate. So I think I'm not really that always ready to go for the change, but more like think through. And I also see many different hypes in the past that's supposed to be the big game changers. It didn't happen. So I think being a little bit aware of not to get into this hype and in this social media circus is like think through how this actually means to you and where you might be in that position. If that happens, how you act to it. And at the end of the day, we're all in the same trajectory as a society. We're all in the same challenges and fear if you look at the global scale, which we can also address. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what came to my mind of this being prepared.
So Eusyntagr made this change from coming from a fixed to a growth mindset. So what would you describe your mindset in addition to being put out on growth?
Yeah, I think it's a good question because I want to believe I'm making the right steps towards it. So I try to shape my mindset into something that allows me to grow, essentially, right? Not get stuck. Something that allows me to deal with challenges, with adversity. And I think a very good complement of this adaptability is resilience, you know? And what you said about having the right attitudes, that in the end, it's not about having a winning mentality, being perfectionist and so on. Magdalena, I think I do agree with you. I agree a lot to it because in the end, Lucas mentioned as well, the world changes, but it takes time to change. So we do have time to adapt ourselves. And if we try to practice being resilient and having that mindset that allows us to deal with adversity and new things and unexpected things, I think this will allow me to shape the future.
That's really great. Also, I would like to add in that I was looking for some fancy quotes regarding mindset. And something I stumbled upon was, again and again, this I can't do it versus I can learn how to do it. And I think there's a really fine difference because it's not I can do it. It's about the I can learn how to do it. And I think this is this growth mindset. And it's leaving space for personal development, and it's not something about toxic perfectionism.
Yeah, I think especially this is a good point. Even admitting I don't know how to do it, but I know I can learn it, and then I will seek for ways how to learn it, to be really open-minded. I think I should know how the skills. Let me find a way how I can learn it. Be even open to ask questions and look for advice, as we said at the beginning, Santiago mentioned. This all gets you to this change and the awareness of how to do it. And I think, yeah, for my example, it would be similar. Like it took a long time to be able to ask questions to not knowing how to do, because, you know, you're supposed to be always perfect. So if you ask questions, then you open up to yourself, you don't know something, and then, you know, there might be consequences. So not having that fear really helps you to address and be adaptive.
Something that you mentioned, Lucas, about, maybe you're in a meeting and you don't know how to do something, but then you can compromise and say, yeah, I can learn about that. And I think from my student perspective, I don't know if any of you have experienced this at the beginning of your careers, but in my first team, I struggled a lot with this because I didn't know how to do many things. And I was finding it really hard to maybe compromise into taking new topics, new projects, because I just felt I didn't know how to do them. And it was the guidance, you know, this networking, being open, communicating with others. And in this case, it was with my supervisor. He was the one that broke that spell and told me, you don't have to know how to do this. You know, you can try to do this and ask for help, ask me for help, ask other team members for help. And in the end, this is not about being perfect and you have to know everything since the very beginning. It's a learning process. It's a process. This really shifted my perspective.
Okay. And it all starts with mindset. I think that's a strong lesson learned here, that and one should be open and not fearful of what might come. Have a mindset of flexibility, preparedness for whatever is going to happen, as much as one can, at least. So did you have something else to add, Lucas?
Yeah, sorry. I was thinking what Santiago mentioned. There was, you know, when I was taught at some point, anyone is happy to answer your questions once. So you should never be afraid to ask them for advice and how to do it. But if you're asking the same questions twice, then it's that's already the line. So if you're wondering, can I ask anybody, you should always be afraid to ask, take notes. But if you go the second time with the same question, then it's probably, then you shouldn't do it. That's getting annoying.
All right. And as we're pushing past the 50-minute mark, I just wanted to thank you both for your time here and for sharing all your insights. Were any final notes or advice to the listeners that you might have?
Yeah, I think, I'm a person that really struggles with this topic, you know, and I think just putting it into practice, try to challenge yourself a little bit and try to work on new projects that really excite you, whether it is doing something silly as a podcast with your friends, you know, or pursuing a musical project, even though you've never played the piano or something like that. This is something I take from my brother and people around me. Even if it doesn't come easily, this excitement will really help. And then with time, I guess, you know, nobody's born being an expert. Like, it took Lucas, I bet it took you some time to get to the point where you are in your career, right? And a lot of trying, not being perfect, maybe one failure here, one failure there. But it's the point of trying to do something about it.
Yeah, I started my life from scratch when I was 19. That's even there. But I want to support Santiago and second his opinion. I think, yeah, if you feel excited about something or even you have a passion for topic, that's definitely on the right track. And you should go for it as long as, back to Magdalena's point, you can sustain yourself financially, at least for the time being. That might be your guiding rules.
All right. So stay excited, stay curious, stay flexible. And don't be intimidated by going into the tech industry or professional industry. It's run by humans just like you. They're fallible just like you. Don't put them on this pedestal that they're totally unapproachable and one cannot possibly get to where they're at. They're people just like you. So I think that's all we've got. Thanks everybody for listening. Appreciate everybody's time for those who listened and our guests as well.
Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Magdalena, do you want to close us out?
Yes, I want to close this out with a little quote that you shouldn't aim to be one of the 30 under 30. You should find your own way and grow as good as you can. Thank you so much, Santiago. Thank you so much, Lucas, for sharing your perspectives, being personal as well. This was really insightful. And just thank you.
Thank you, Magdalena. Thank you, David. Also, thanks for including the students in this. I think this is an amazing perspective to have. So thanks a lot.
Good. Thank you for having us.
Thank you both.